When you go back, do you want to go back and have a little look around?
No. Well, I went... My son, Tim, is closely connected, obviously, as you know, with Gibraltar. He goes there about once a year. And I went out with him once to stay at Tarifa. And we went back into Gibraltar for a day or so. And that time we contacted the naval intelligence officer to check that we were allowed to go and visit King's Lines. So he accepted that we were cleared to go and look at it. And I went to see it after it was full.
And what? How long after was it? How many years later?
That was after my second tour.
So when in the 1970s or something?
Probably, or 1980s even.
And what was it like going back then?
Different. I don't want to go back to Gibraltar now because when I was there, the social life with all the services there was absolutely fantastic. There was something doing for these service people almost every night. So the social life for the family and things like that was good. The schools were good for the children. And as I say, it was a very enjoyable place to be, as well as doing the work that was necessary there. Now, the social life has completely changed. I don't know what it's like now with the place being more or less only civilian. It probably changed entirely. And I don't think it's the same as it was when I was there. I look back at it with a lot of nostalgia. But I'm not interested again in travelling back to Gibraltar. Not really. It might be all right for the odd day visit, but nothing more than that.
So let's talk. Are you okay to go on for a little bit more? I'm getting a bit fed up, or are you okay to just go on for a bit more? I wanted to talk to you just a little bit about Gibraltar now. I wanted to talk to you about two more things, really. I wanted to talk to you about Gibraltar, and I wanted to talk to you about long jump, because that is part of who you are, and I think it's important to have a little bit about that. So I just wanted to talk to you about, you say in your article about living in an extraordinary house in the middle of Gibraltar where Napoleon's body might have been laid.
Nelson's.
Yeah, can you tell me about that?
Well, the rumour goes, although I think it's been disproved by fact, that Nelson, after he died, was brought to Rovio Bay, or the anchor just off Rovio Bay, because I think his ship was too much draft to get into Rovio Bay, but it was anchored off Rovio Bay, and Nelson's body was taken ashore and embalmed in rum, or whatever they embalmed them in those days, and laid on the table of the house that I occupied at 4 Rovio Parade. Now, that's the rumour. But I think it's been disproved because they reckon that Nelson was never brought ashore. But that's the saying that goes.
Well, I think that's very interesting because there's so many stories of him being pickled in rum and then the sailors drinking it to have a bit of his spirit and, you know, all that. So I think we'll just collect all those stories together, which is really good. So tell me a little bit about the life you had there, and you and your wife and the children. Like in the fit. Well, let's start with what it was like in the perhaps in the 50s and the 60s. It wasn't so different.
When I went there in 1958 to begin with, I'd just competed in the Olympics. In 56, I competed in the Olympics in Melbourne, and I was nearing the end of my international career, which had been for 10 years. I did 10 years as an international athlete, and I decided that I wanted to compete back in England in 1958 at the Commonwealth Games, which were going to be held in Cardiff. And although I wasn't competing in London for any of the England or Great Britain teams, I was selected for the Commonwealth Games in 1958, as I say, in Cardiff. And in order to do some training in Gibraltar, there was no long jump pit there, to my knowledge. So I made my own pit at the NOP, Naval Officers Pavilion, which was a hockey pitch and tennis courts. And I made it a long jump pit there, which I so I could train for the Commonwealth Games. And as best of my knowledge, NOP probably doesn't exist today. It's something else now, but probably the long jump pit's still there.
And did you... So that was a part of your life, obviously. You were doing your engineering by day, and then...
I was a complete amateur. In those days, all the international athletes, bar a few specialists, were all amateur. I worked during the day, I trained at night. And that work went on for 10 years.
And your wife was also, wasn't she played hockey or something?
My wife was a PE teacher, and she gave up teaching when we were in Gibraltar and when we had children. And she organised the hockey for the Wrens and had a Wrens team for hockey on the NOP ground. And she used to play, and she used to play tennis in the NOP tennis tournaments and things like that.
And you talked about how integral the military were, the forces were, to the sort of whole feel of the place and the social life. So there was no sort of force and civilians mixed totally.
Well, we weren't anti the civilians. We tried to get on very well with them, obviously, and I was very friendly with the chief engineers of the colonial government and the city council. And when we had a cocktail party night, they were always invited as well.
Are we talking about Gibraltarians?
Gibraltarians, yes. So we wasn't that we didn't want to mix with them. We did mix with them as far as possible, certainly work with them during the day, but the social life was largely service.
And therefore British?
Yes. I don't want you to go away with the idea that we were anti-Gibraltarians or we snubbed them at all. We weren't, in the slightest. We got on with them as well as we could and had invites from them for their social gatherings as well as with ours. So we were part of the Gibraltarian colony as such when we were there.
That's fine, thank you for saying that, because I think that is quite an important thing, because in that didn't work as well in some of the British colonies at all. But because Europeans were...
part about it was that Gibraltarians spoke English, although between themselves it was a part of English and Spanish put together. But I think it was simpler for that than it would be in most other places, although Malta was probably fairly similar.
Yes, because I think there's a shared culture, of sort of European culture, so obviously there is more in common. Yeah. Mm. And did you feel, I mean, that is quite an interesting point about the Spanish, because when I visited Gibraltarians in this country, who have been fantastic, and they will speak to me in English, but I can hear them in the kitchen talking to their wives or whatever in Spanish.
They do speak in Spanish, yes. Mark you, that the Spanish have alienated themselves from Gibraltar by closing the frontier and things like that and being very, very awkward about it. And you can't blame the Gibraltarians for disliking the Spanish, really. I don't know what the workforce in Gibraltar is today. I imagine it's all Spanish again. Because I remember going to Algeciras recently when I camped over there and went into, as I say, Gibraltar the odd day. And in the part of the houses with garages and things in Algeciras and in La Linea were full of motorbikes that are from Spanish people that were, or not Spanish people, British people probably, and Spanish, that came over to Gibraltar every day to work. So probably there's quite a lot of alienated people working in Gibraltar from coming across every day, even now.
Yes, I'm sure that's true. And I think there is a sort of, when you talk to Gibraltarians and ask them, what do they feel? You know, who do they think they are? Are they British, Spanish? They all, well, they actually come back with a variety of different. Sometimes they feel Gibraltarian with a British passport. But there's something about, particularly I think maybe people who live here who miss the Mediterranean, miss that, because it's so different, isn't it?
We had a maid in Gibraltar the whole time we were there, and the second time we were there, she came back to work for us again. And she was Spanish, and she eventually married a Gibraltarian. Unfortunately, he died early, and we've lost touch with her again. I think she's gone back to Spain to live. But she didn't speak any English. We had to do sign language with her all the time.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yes, so she just spoke Spanish. I'm sure that's true. When you first went there, I mean, I was actually going to ask you a little bit about what the place looked like. I mean, the first time you went there, it was only, well, I suppose, what, 12, 14 years after the end of the war? I mean, were there still Nissen huts and that sort of thing? Can you remember what it looked like?
No, it was completely normal, actually. When we first went there, we stayed in a hotel on Main Street, actually. And after two or three weeks staying in the hotel there, we got a lease on a civilian flat very close to Main Street. That was before we got an Admiralty hiring. And we stayed in the town itself for so many months, quite a while, and we had the odd party there in the town on the balcony and things of the flat that we were living in.
Was it really good fun? Did you have good fun that you
yes,
did?
Yes. It was totally different from the Admiralty that I knew when I was working at Admiralty itself. There, we were not in the Admiralty building in London. We were out at Pinner in what was an old army, wartime army emergency hospital, I think, Hutty Camps. And that was the civil engineering department headquarters of the Admiralty out in Pinner. And opposite us at Pinner in those days was cows in the field grazing, which I imagine today it's all been built up.
And
the Cutty camp would have been destroyed by now to be built on and things like that.
Yeah, very different.
But the Admiralty, we worked with one part of the Admiralty, the mechanical engineering part, was down in Bath. And we used to have to travel down to Bath every now and again to see them, and they used to travel up to us at Pinner to liaise with the designs that we were doing.
And, I mean, what about, we talked a little bit about the social life in Gibraltar, places you lived. When you think about it, I mean, what's your sort of image of Gibraltar when you think about it? What sort of picture comes into your mind when you think Gibraltar?
Cheap liquor.
Was it really cheap?
Brandy in Gibraltar was very, very cheap, about 10 shillings a bottle or something like that. And the main drink in Gibraltar was horse's neck, which was brandy and ginger ale. And it was, well, probably smuggled across the border, quite honestly. But whiskey was only £1 a bottle and things like that. It was very, very cheap drink in Gibraltar. So you could have a party very, very cheaply. And there were certain Gibraltarians that used to organise the parties for you. They didn't know work during the day, or they did ordinary work during the day, and they would organise the party and produce the tapas and things like that for the party itself. So if you had a party, the organisation was very, very simple indeed. You got one of these local people that knew all about it to do it for you.
Fantastic. There must have been some fierce drinking, goodness, at that price.
I was teetotal in those days.
Probably safer. Yeah, fierce drinking and fierce hangovers from all that, Spanish brandy.
Fundador.
That's my father used to talk about, Fundador. Yeah, Fundador.